And as I mentioned, our vacancies there, we've got much higher proportion of our vacancies on SAGE. Are you all familiar with SAGE? Student and Graduate Employment Vacancies Database. It's increasing year on year, so our vacancies are actually up on 2010, and it's looking quite good for this year as well. Wanted to ask you a question in terms of what percentage of informatics graduates you do think went on to further study out of that 94? Nine? Any takers on nine? Those figures are actually over a few years. Back in 2008, it was only 9%. It's been gradually creeping up. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. The 2008 was the 9% of 2008 Edinburgh graduates in further study. The 25% had gone up in 2009. By 2010, it was 37%. Some of those people will have been making an informed choice that actually further study was definitely for them. They love their subject, they want to take it on a bit further. Or they'd done their homework and found out it was almost an acquired element to increase their chances of getting into a job. I suspect quite a high proportion of that 37% thought, don't know what I want to do, it's a bit scary out there, I'll just do some further study, I'll leave it an extra year. But sometimes they're in exactly the same position. What, 9, 10 months? Later, a master's course is less than a year, so it's not a huge amount of time to sit it out and hide it out. And what can happen is actually you're just competing with the next year's lot of graduates for similar jobs. Your degree actually offers a lot of skills and experience that are in demand, so that often there may not be a need for you to do further study. If you're desperate to do it, you love your subject, great reasons for doing it. But don't feel it's always a requirement that you have to get a master's, you have to do a PhD. There's a whole host of sectors and jobs, and we'll come onto that in a moment, where you don't actually need further study, you don't need a master's to do. Some technical roles may require a specific postgraduate qualification. As I mentioned, if it's almost seen as a sectoral requirement, the employers like you to have it because they recognise it's an advanced level experience. You've had an extra year to build that skills and experience. There may be specific technical elements they want you to have that can only be covered through a postgraduate qualification, but it's not always the case. I also feel that to a certain extent, the fact that over the last couple of years, what's perceived as a fairly uncertain job market may have encouraged more people to stick with further study, maybe go on to do a PhD. And that's great if they get a very supportive supervisor and they really, it's an informed choice. You know, they're choosing to do that PhD because they've looked at other things, weighed them all up, and in evidence, they've chosen to do a PhD. But I suspect in a number of cases, that's not always true. Any idea what the employment sectors, in addition to the IT sector, that our informatics graduates go into? Any takers? Finance, banking, any more? Yep. They're all up there, but there's a few extra. Your skills are required in all sectors. There isn't a sector out there that doesn't need people who have good IT skills, good IT experience. So don't feel that you're too restricted. It's actually worth, you know, keeping an open mind, thinking where are the jobs that I could do, but also what sectors could I do that in? The same job could feel very different depending on the sector. So you may find actually the context, the environment that suits one person might not suit another person. So trying to find out about these different sectors and what roles there are within these sectors might just open up some extra possibilities that you hadn't thought about. You can also think across public sector and private sector as well. Which of these options do you think are not possible for an informatics graduate? Vet? Any other ones? Sorry, what's that? Prison officer, solicitor? A bit of a sneaky question, actually. They're all possible. You're right, some would require some further training. In the vet's case, for example, significant training. But an awful lot of these jobs, you either don't need any more training, you can actually move into these jobs and develop, be trained in the role, gain a professional qualification, or else with a one-year course, possibly in some cases, you can do a conversion course that would take you to the same point as somebody who's done a law degree, for example. About 50% of graduate vacancies are open to any discipline. And that can come as a bit of a shock to some people, that employers they may not necessarily be looking for specific key knowledge. They're looking for capacity, they're looking for potential, they're looking for people who can be flexible, who can adapt, who are good at learning, who can pick up things really quickly, who can move into all sorts of sectors. So they don't actually narrow it down to a particular discipline. But have a look and see what some of our graduates actually did. There's quite a range of jobs. The majority of 2010 ones did go into related roles, so things like software development, analyst, consultant. But previous years, you've had broadcast research engineer, lab support engineer, quality assurance, and non-IT roles in retail, marketing, RAF pilot, slightly less formal roles, so things like chalet host, running, somebody ran their own surf school, I think. So it's about, again, keeping your options open. There's lots more ideas of what people went on to do. I've brought a little handout with me, so you're welcome to take this away with you at the end. I've also got some booklets that I'll be passing around in just a moment. If you have a look at the Career Service website, there's a whole section there, what can I do with my degree? That'll give you lots of inspiration. In terms of employers, again, a varied range. The larger employers tend to be more visible. They're the ones you'll see on campus. They're the ones that are sponsoring events. So sometimes there's a perception that's all there is. So we try and overcome that by having, like, for example, last year we had a focus on IT careers fair where we invited smaller, medium-sized companies. These companies don't necessarily, they might only have 2-3 people working for them. It's a fairly niche market. So they don't have a stand at our careers fair. So there's other ways that we try to engage them so that they can come and meet you and you can talk with them. Also, there are some major firms, things like Adobe, Autonomy, smaller technology, finance, consulting, the ones that you did mention are in there. But there's also universities, healthcare, media, games, telecommunication. What surprised me is the majority of our graduates over the last couple of years actually either remained in Scotland or went to London. There wasn't that much in between last year. Again, a few more in terms of e-commerce, media, games, finance. Smaller technology firms, Contemplate, I think is up there. Yeah, Contemplate is an EU Edinburgh University spin-out company. So it started off with students here having an idea, setting up their own business through Edinburgh University's launch.edacuc facility. iFormis is involved in web-based systems. Syngro does customer feedback technology. And games companies like Rockstar, Black Company Studios, they've all taken our students over the last couple of years. The ones who do go on to further study, again, I wanted to give you an idea of the scope, the range that people go on to do. And though they included study in California, York, Cambridge and Edinburgh. Is anybody thinking that further study might be for them? Well, now's the time to think that it's academically, it's quite competitive, so they're looking at least a minimum 2-1, particularly if you want a funded place on a course. So, like, stick at it, make sure you do well with the exams all the way through, so you're anticipating at least a 2-1 to maximise your chances of either getting a PhD or moving into a master's. As well as sticking with your academic, the academic is one part of it, and it is a massive part of it, but it's not the only part. If there's a couple of you competing for the same job and you've both got 2-1 degrees, you've both done exactly the same course, employers do have to look at other things that you've been doing. So in terms of trying to get internships, work experience, voluntary work, getting involved in activities out with your actual curriculum. And again, on this little handout, I've given you a few suggestions for how you can do that. What you do over the next 2 years will make a huge difference. So if you've been having a good time at university, studying hard, it's great, but don't spend all your time in the pub or the library. Try and get a bit of balance and do other things. Has anybody been involved in student activities in first year through societies? Yeah. Well, if you've been involved as a member, think about extending that involvement a little bit. Take on perhaps a more responsible role. Do something different in that society so you can expand on your experiences a bit. There's also Edinburgh Edge. That's a fairly new thing. It's a web resource where all the opportunities across the university are on there. So that includes things like, for example, if the School of Informatics is involved in open days, as it will be, often they need student ambassadors to perhaps show people around the School of Informatics, and they will tend to recruit you to do that type of work. So that's something you're interested in doing in terms of expanding your public engagement experience, developing interpersonal skills. You know, it's all chances to do things like that within the university. So things like that and an awful lot more are advertised on the Edge employability website. Again, sorry, that's chopping that off a little bit. In order to find out more, I've just given you a very brief introduction to some of these job roles, and I'm aware that sometimes a job title doesn't necessarily give you very much to go on. If you want to find out a bit more about some of these jobs, come in and use the resources within the Career Service, but also the link that I put there, Explore Your Options, Occupations. We've put a lot of work into getting a web-based resource together that will increase your information, if you like. They'll give you a lot more ideas on what's involved in these actual jobs and give you ways to find out more about them, ways to find out about how you can talk to people doing these jobs if you do want to try and get some experience. So it's a lot more, our website's a lot more than just Sage. So if you are trying to expand your awareness of what could I do, if one of two of those job titles intrigue you a little bit and you want to find a bit more, use the resources I've highlighted there. If you are thinking about postgraduate study, start looking into it now. There may be things that you can increase your chances. So for example, doing a study abroad exchange program in between third and fourth year would be a really strong thing to be able to put on your application for a PhD or a master's, for example. And there's lots of things that we do in terms of talks, events, employer presentations throughout every semester. So please do take advantage of those. Because remember what I said about making an informed decision about, it's easy, I think, for it to drift into a decision. If it turns out well, great, but sometimes it doesn't always if you haven't perhaps looked to the options and weighed them up a little bit first. Again, I put a few links there in terms of these are good sites for IT occupational information, the Inside Careers, Target Jobs and Prospects. E-Placement Scotland, I mentioned that, we tend to mention that in first year as a way of getting IT-related placements. You didn't take advantage of it earlier, maybe think about getting some relevant work experience through them. So for those of you who haven't found it yet, that's what our website looks like at the moment. I say it's much more than just Sage. So we have things like their career contacts, people who've agreed to talk to you about what they do. We've got quite a lot of our graduates on there. If you want to phone them up, send them an email, go and meet them, talk to them about what they do, what's it like working for their company, they've agreed to do that with you. So they're nice, easy people to start with. We're also hoping to expand it from the alumni network that's set up at university, which is a lot bigger. So we're constantly trying to expand our career contacts database. I mentioned E-Placement Scotland. If you are thinking about trying to get an IT-related role, perhaps this next summer, they advertise paid vacation IT jobs and also year-long placements, if that's something you're able to negotiate with your department. Target Jobs, Inside Careers and Prospects, they also advertise good numbers of internships, but not all of them are for second years. Sometimes they're particularly pitched at third years. That's not to say you can't approach those companies and ask them to take you on. Just sometimes they're using their internship programs as a way of almost selecting their graduates for the next year. So sometimes if people manage to get an internship, they may actually be guaranteed a job when they're finished, or at least be guaranteed an interview. Sometimes second years have to work a little bit harder to try and get some experience with these larger companies that offer internship programs. Some of them will actually recruit directly through your school. So again, keep an eye out if your school is sending out emails for employers who actually recruit into internships. Move on to talking a little bit about values. You're going to be working for a long time. I'm probably going to be working till I'm 70, probably. Who knows how long you're going to be working for? You know, as an aging population, we all are all having to work longer. So it's worth thinking about, how do you want to work? What things are important to you? Who do you want to be working with? What context? Finding something you actually enjoy doing is going to be quite important. If you don't enjoy doing it, you can find something else, but you want to try and limit the amount of times you have an unhappy experience if you can. So actually thinking about some of these values, motivations, what interests you, why you want to do these things, it's really important to start thinking about that now. And testing things, you know, this is a good time to test things through work placements, through summer jobs, through a bit of voluntary work. If you don't like it, notch it down to experience, at least you know what to avoid in the future. In terms of managing your career, some people say, oh, you can't manage your career, your career just happens. But there are certain things you can do to help it along, to help you be in as strong a position as you can. That's the sort of model that we follow. What most people tend to jump in at is the making applications, go straight to the applying for jobs. And that can be great if you find something that you really like the sound of, but actually it should happen a lot earlier, the thinking about yourself and what's out there. Because if you're actually applying for a job that requires you to do a lot of public presentation, be a really confident presenter, actually you don't like doing that. You feel your strength are somewhere else. Chances are you could do that job, but you're probably going to be a bit miserable doing it. And you might be able to bluff your way for a short amount of time. But if that's going to be a big part of your job, presenting to clients, for example, and you actually don't like that element of the job, you're not going to be particularly happy in it. So the more you know about yourself, and I'm aware that can be a bit touchy-feely for some people, but if you've not actually stopped to think, what are my interests, what are my values, what type of person am I, it's hard to relate yourself to job adverts, to job descriptions when they come up, if you haven't started here first. So actually thinking about yourself and then looking at what's out there, trying to sort of relate yourself between the two. It's never going to be the exact match. Some people say there's not an ideal job, but if you can really identify what makes you happy, what makes you tick, what you get really satisfied doing out of your work, and try as closely as you can find that in a job and with an organisation, chances are you're going to be a lot happier. I'm going to illustrate this with an example. Can you all stand up, please? I know it's Friday afternoon, it's hard. Get the blood back going, everybody stand on your feet. Can you stay standing if you'd quite like to earn 40,000 a year? Can you stay standing if you want to earn 100,000 a year? Can you stay standing if you want to work in a role where there's lots of scope for development and international travel? Can you, a few hesitations at the back there. Can you stay standing if you want to work in London or Birmingham? Can you stay standing if you don't mind having to cancel family holidays, birthdays at the last minute? Can you stay standing if you want to work in the financial sector? Stay standing if you fancy being an investment banker. That was just a wee exercise. You were all sitting down there at different stages, but it shows you different things matter to different people. So it is worth thinking, if you've never actually thought, yeah, where do I want to be? What do I want to be doing? How important is work-life balance to me? For some people, they like the buzz of that, you know, being able to drop everything and having to put in 16-hour days. That's really exciting for people. The thought of getting up and going flying to one place at 5 o'clock one day, you're off somewhere else at 6 o'clock the next morning. Some people get a real buzz for that. Other people, it just wouldn't suit them at all. Is there something else that you do in life that it's important for you to keep doing? So, for example, if you are really into mountain biking, if you really, then you want to be a place where you can do that. I had one person who solely chose where they were going to study, or was it work, based on where the waves were, because they were a real surfing bum and they needed to go where the waves were. Somebody else was a keen mountain climber, so really couldn't see themselves working in an area if they couldn't actually at the weekends get out and do some stuff like that. So the personal things matter. If you've not stopped to think, maybe start thinking about it now. You do make choices in life, and these are some of the choices you're going to make. They do require good self-awareness and good opportunity awareness. And to actually think through some of these, we've put together a number of short exercises. So I'm just going to pass around a booklet to make sure you've all got one. Okay. Could you help me out to do that? You pass. You could pass that bundle back. Thank you. I think that's probably enough. But if anybody doesn't get one, there's more down here. Mentioned some of these important factors. So something like location. Do you want to stay in the UK or are you keen to work overseas? For some of you who are international, it's important to get some experience here. Others might actually want to go back home and get some experience in your home country. I mentioned for some people the surfing and the climbing. If you need sea and you need mountains, you've got to go to where these things are. Your chosen choice of work, if you like, might not always be available in the place you want to be. You may have some personal commitments. For some people, they have to be in a certain place. Might that influence the job or the employer who's available locally? So you might get your ideal job, but maybe not in your ideal place. Or actually, you might get to work for an employer you want to work for, but actually, is the role available? So trying to work out where might you compromise and to what degree might you compromise, because that level of compromise is very personal and different from person to person. In terms of salary, how important is that? Well, I think we've established it's pretty important to most people. But again, knowing at what point you're prepared to compromise. If you're going to get paid £100,000, chances are that organisation wants their money's worth. So there will be a trade-off for that in terms of what you're expected to do, perhaps how long you're expected to be there, whether you're expected to be on call. Might you be on call overnight, for example? Again, wouldn't bother some people, would bother other people quite a lot. How important are things like promotion, opportunities for advancement? Again, for some people to be able to see a progression and to progress quite quickly, it's a very important part of who they are. For others, it may not be such a deal breaker if there are other things there that satisfy different elements of them. I put there altruism. That's where actually it's concern or welfare for others is something that's very important to people. And that could come down to, for example, say the role that you do, the organisation that you do it with. So for example, you could be an IT analyst, but if you're doing it for one of the finance houses or you're doing it for the co-op, who are a massive, massive company and need finance analysts too, but their ethos is very different to maybe one of the investment banks. Or, for example, you could be doing a very similar job, but how it feels doing it for Edinburgh University versus how it might be doing it for cancer research or Greenpeace, or actually how it might feel for doing it as your own business, setting up with a colleague. So it's the same, similar job, similar activities, but actually the context is really going to change how that might feel for you. So altruism and ethical companies cover an area of motivation and values. Again, it's very personal. For some people, it won't make much difference. You know, they're more interested in the job, but maybe the organisation doesn't matter so much. But for some people, it's very important in terms of what that organisation does, what their ethos is, where they stand on certain things, for example. That working environment, again, touches a little bit what I said, whether you feel you want to work for a smaller company, a larger organisation, whether you want to be office-based or field-based. Do you want to do a lot of travelling? Would that give you a bit of a buzz? Is that the sort of thing you like to do? Do you want to be working for public sector or for private sector? If you don't know much about these different contexts, it's quite hard to make a judgment, actually. So that's why sometimes, you know, coming along and meeting people, talking to our career contacts, coming along to things like career fairs where you can actually talk to people, or some of the presentations, actually, that happens where they bring people along, you can actually have a session chatting to them, saying, what is it like? What's the good, the bad, the ugly? What don't you like? What do you wish you'd known before you went to work for this organisation? So it's trying to take advantage of contacts that you meet through events we do here, through academic contacts as well. So you're building up a much bigger picture than sometimes just reading something can give you. That last one, autonomy, is being able to have a lot of control of what you do. Again, for some people it's important. Could argue that if you are your own business, you have a lot of control, but actually you might not always. There could be external influences, whether it's family, whether it's the bank controlling what you actually do. In some smaller organisations, you may be required to turn your hand to doing an awful lot of other things. There won't be a big team of people there to do lots of different roles, so you may have to do a lot more yourself. Having that flexibility, that adaptability, again, that could be great for some people. Other people want quite a defined role, and they may find that easier to have in a larger organisation. Even within a larger organisation, they don't tend to keep you doing the same thing for years and years and years. They like employees who can be adaptable, flexible, so the projects will change, the departments may change. You may be seconded to work for a client company, for example, in another country. In terms of what happens next, I give you that little booklet. There's some exercises in there. Again, for those of you who find it quite hard going through this thought process, it may be the first time you've actually sat down and thought some of these questions. Using the little exercises, just dip in and do them, only about 5-10 minutes. So you build up a better picture of yourself, and then I think that really helps to identify what might suit you, where might suit you. It's important, particularly in this economic climate, to try and make the most of your time here. So I've touched on some of the things that you can do, but think about what you could do the rest of the semester and then be building on that over the next couple of years. Still balancing it around your studies, you have to make sure you get your good degree. It is a question of balance. At the beginning of third year, we send you a lot more information about things happening in the Career Service Programme. So do take advantage of these opportunities to come and meet employers. There's also further study fairs. I think there's one coming up quite soon, actually, next week. There's a postgraduate fair happening next week. And I'd say keep checking the informatics website because employers will target you directly. And we're here, the Career Service here, to help you at any stage. For those of you who haven't really started thinking about it, doesn't matter, you can come and see us now. We can perhaps highlight some of these areas, show you where you can find out a bit more about different types of work. You can start weighing up the pros and cons for you. And if any of you would like to have a discussion, you're welcome to do that at any time. What I'd like to do now, just a few more minutes, I'd like to pass around these. I don't think I'll need one of everything. Again, would you mind passing around these? It's one of each. Because I'm aware you're all busy people, you've got a lot to do, this might be the first time you get a tiny little window of opportunity to answer some of these questions. Do you want me to break up the bundle and get it around a bit quicker? Did everybody get one of these, or did anybody not got one? If you know anybody who would like one, please come and take one at the end. I'll pass them around. Do you want to give me some of the bundle and I'll start at the top and work my way back? One each. Okay. Yeah. You've each got one.
Yeah.
All right. Sure. Pass that one along. One of each. Otherwise, we'll be all day. Can I task you, otherwise I'll be here all day, just to pass. You pass them back, and you pass it. Make sure you've got one of everything, okay? The white copy are some ideas and also some links to some of the things that I've been talking about. And the yellow copy is something I'm going to ask you to do just for the next few minutes. So just to finish off this session, we're going to do a very brief visualization exercise. And I can feel some of you going, it's not really me, but give it a go. This might be the first chance you're getting to actually pose yourself these questions. I want you to think about how old you are now, and imagine it's 5 years in the future, and you've actually already graduated. A couple of years down the line, you're already finished. On that golden ticket, I'd like you to write down the date, 5 years from now, how old you think you are. Think about, you have graduated 2 years ago, it's a different world. Those examples up there are iPods or implants. We don't need to buy them anymore, we come with them. The Rio Olympics are long gone, and those two guys are long gone as well. So in a moment, I'm going to read out a series of questions. And what I'd like you to do is think about these questions and just jot down in that golden ticket what your instant responses are. So I'd like you to think about, what do you think you're doing 5 years from now? Ideally, what would you like to be doing 5 years from now? Do you see yourself as working, studying, or travelling? Maybe you're taking some time out or doing something a bit different, unusual. Think about, what are you doing if you are studying it? What subject do you think you might be studying? If you're doing a job, do you have a sense already of what that job might be or what might involve? I want you to think about that and write down whatever comes into your head. Next, I want you to think about the sort of knowledge and the talents and skills you think that you're going to be using to do that. So if you're working, are you actually applying your degree subject knowledge? Is that something that would be important for you to be doing a few years down the line? If so, which parts, which elements of your degree do you think at this stage, I know it's early days, but do you think there may be certain elements of your degree you actually do want to be applying in a job or taking on to the next level in further study? Are there any practical skills or the particular programmes, for example, within your IT knowledge that you want to be using, that you want to be developing? Or much broader than that, are there other technical skills, things that you enjoy doing, technical applications? Do you have any specific talents? So, for example, for some people, doing something musical, something artistic, it's important to have that in their life. Is that something that you want to be using in a job? Or perhaps taking on to further study? Or actually, maybe is it more important to make sure that the job that you are doing still gives you the time and space to do that music, to do that artistic activity that you enjoy doing? It's really important to have that in your life. Do you want to do it as a job, or actually will it be okay as long as you've still got time to follow it in your personal life? So perhaps making sure the job that you're doing, the employer that you work for, you still have that work-life balance that allows you to do these things that you enjoy doing. Do you see yourself as using particular skills? So for example, people skills or working in teams, is that something that you particularly enjoy? So is that something that you might want to have in a job that you were doing in the future? Do you like explaining ideas to people or meeting lots of new people? Again, would these be things you want to do? These are just suggestions. There may be lots of other things that you come up with. Perhaps you started researching something. Is there a particular topic you're finding really interesting at the moment? Could you see yourself developing that a bit further down the line? The next question is thinking about the environment that you see yourself being in 5 years from now. Is it a large multinational company? Is it a global company actually working for them overseas? Are you working for a university or a small local business? Is it your own business? Do you see yourself working in public sector, so working for government, for council, local authority, within a health service, for example, so public sectors, with an educational system? Or do you see yourself much more in a private sector, commercial field? Are you in the UK? If so, where would you like to be 5 years from now? Perhaps you want to take the skills that you're gaining now and you want to apply them in a developing country, if that's something that's important for you. Again, thinking about your lifestyle, where are you living? Are you still here? Are you still in Edinburgh? Or have you moved to London, Manchester? Location was an issue for some of you, so where do you see that location being? Are you sharing a house or a flat? Have you managed to get your own place? If not, who might you be sharing with? And what do you think you've achieved in the last 5 years? In terms of your degree, what did you get? Did you get a 2-1? Did you get a first? Perhaps you got a 2-2, but you managed to build up lots of work experience. If you did gain work experience, what did you get? Who was it with? Maybe there's some other things that you did in terms of your personal life. Do you playing sport, running a marathon, doing some travelling? If so, where were these experiences? Perhaps you managed to get into a career that was particularly competitive. If so, what did you do to get into that career? And perhaps you actually had to take some risks to do it. So for example, something that challenged you that you had to overcome, if you really didn't want to move to London, for example, because you weren't sure how it was going to suit you, how did you overcome that? What was your experience? What do you feel about it now that you're there? Risk could also mean things like that example I chose of somebody who didn't particularly like giving presentations. Are you doing a job that involves giving presentations? How do you feel about it now? Did you do something that helped you to feel more comfortable? And finally, what did you do at university to make all of that happen? Were there certain things, maybe not to address all of them, but were certain things that you did while you were here that made these things take place? Maybe think about who helped you along the way. Was it particular academic staff that were supportive? Did you meet somebody at a careers fair or through the career contacts? Did you come along to one of the Focus in IT events and meet a small local company that actually changed your perception of something? Did you have to do anything extra? So, for example, out with your course, did you learn a language that actually really helped you when it came to applying for the job that you wanted to do or be in a particular country? Do you not have that language now? Could you think about trying to develop language skills? For those of you who did join clubs and societies in your first year, second year, did you actually extend that involvement so that you actually had a much more responsibility and extra things to show on your experiences and your skill sets when you applied for that job? Did it make a difference and got you where you are now? I'm hoping that, you know, some of those questions may have been easy, some of may not be so easy, but I'm hoping even just a few minutes, taking that time to think about those questions and think, could you come up with an answer? For things that you couldn't come up with an answer for, now's the start to think, time to thinking about it, and hopefully maybe next year you'll be able to think about those areas a little bit more and be a bit further forward. So you might not have answers to everything, but you might be a little bit further forward. I'm going to finish up just by reminding you where you are. If any of this today, whether it's related to occupational information, destination information, what you could do, you feel you need a bit of help answering some of those questions, considering some of those areas in terms of values and motivations, please do book an appointment, a short appointment. You can have one any day. Just phone us up from 9:30, get a short appointment. Or if you would like a longer session, you can do that as well. Has anybody got any questions? Nope. Well, so make sure you've got one of the booklets, and the little white handout has got some of the links that's on the presentation. Otherwise, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, if there's any spare tickets or handouts, just put them up at the back and I'll get them. We'll use them again.
Because in Germany, your CV is literally what you've done. There's no talking about it. It's
much more like the American
facts. It's
version.
Not. It's no. There's no flowery language. There's no. It's bullet points that are true unconditionally. There's no. I'm a good team worker because no one cares. If you want to write that in your cover letter, and all about how you worked in
the
team.
What the difference is the evidence to back up those things, and sometimes.
Because what I've seen people write, I mean, while technically I can do the same thing with my life, I worked as part of a team last year in customer service. None of that's a lie. It all feels rather pointless because while it was a team, the way the whole thing was structured, I could have been doing that on my own. Even worse, I could have automated the whole thing to run by itself without any human involvement.
You know what the difference is then? There's a couple of things that you bring up. It's relevance. You know, are they talking about things that are relevant?
The problem is you can't actually tell from the CV if that's all just...
From the CV.
Yeah.
So they're maybe not being concise enough with their evidence or making it relevant enough.
I don't know. I just feel like I don't like talking about stuff like that in a CV. I'll talk about it in a cover letter, but just my CV is not, for me, not supposed to be about what skills I have
or
whatever.
Are you applying for a specific thing?
Well, usually I tailor the CV and
well,
cover letter to whatever I'm applying.
Because I think where you have already got some relevant experience, then, I mean, you can stick with a fairly formal one page if you want it. You know, if you already had some
that's
relevant experience, it's fine.
Any more than one page feels like too much.
Where it gets harder is if they have a lot of criteria and they're looking mostly, they're looking to see not only have you understood their criteria, but you have also related your own experiences to that criteria. That's where, to a certain extent, the CV has to do some of that. It maybe can't do it all in the cover letter because they might start with your CV.
Mm.
So if they pick up your CV, instantly they've always got at the back of their mind certain criteria, experience, skills, quality, you know, certain things that they want. If it's obvious enough from your one-page CV, you've got those things. If they're not having to do too much translation, fine, that is. But often in a one-page one, it's harder to make it clear and transparent that you've got what they're looking for. The cover letter's having to work much harder for you. But what concerns me is they may not look at your cover letter.
Wait, companies ask you for a cover letter and don't look at it?
Well, the cover letter is about your motivation, why you want to do the things. You can't put that in your CV.
Yeah.
The cover letter is for paragraphs, but more discursive writing. The CV is definitely for headings, bullet points, concise writing. It's not about big blocks of paragraphs.
Yeah.
So if that's what you've been seeing in people,
well,
doesn't work.
I don't know. Even I'm used to what experience, what qualities do you have? Three years of Java development, stuff like that. Not I am a team player because
I. Work because that's a particular technical. Yeah, having a little section saying these are my, I've got 3 years experience of this program, if that's what they want.
For example, I wouldn't,
really
I'm a class rep for this course actually, and it's also well a user registered one too, because most people in informatics don't actually get user registered because no one sends us the emails, I found out randomly, which is rather annoying. Most people who are putting the work in here won't ever get any credit for it because of bad organization. Anyway, that's a topic for a different day. I wouldn't say that because of that I'm a great team player, even though you regularly have to come into meetings and do organisational things.
So the planning and organising could be an element if it was relevant to the job. If they don't mention planning, you know, you don't have to talk about things. You're welcome. If they don't mention something, you don't have to give screeds about it. It's what's relevant. You know, so if over and above, if they specify certain technical skills, you can make that as concise as you are talking about it. If they do want these broader transferable skills like communication, like planning and organising.
I don't even know why they still say we want a good communicator, because that's implicit in any job pretty much.
That's where you're wrong. It's about they want to see that you've understood what type of communication they want in their contacts with their colleagues, clients, whoever you need to communicate with. They want to see you have an understanding of what that means to them, but also that you recognise in yourself where you've developed that. So if they do specify a work communication skills, even if it's adding in something to how you're talking about your experience, so for example, instead of just putting class rep, you may have to put class rep involved balancing, I should imagine, a bit of time management and trying to balance whatever activities you were doing.
Life is an act of time balancing.
But you have to see that and tell them. It's about not assuming that they will see that. Because sometimes, if you're getting them to see that, you're making them work a bit harder. You're making them look at what could be the bare bones of, you know, here's me, this is what I've done. You're asking them to translate that into their criteria. If they've got time, yeah, I'm sure they'll do it. But busy people, you know, and sometimes it's depressingly short how long they might glance at a CV before they decide, do I want to keep reading them? So where you have a slight advantage in if you're applying for very technically specific roles that require 2 years Java experience, if you've got that in a box, instantly that will draw them in. But if there's other things that they want and you haven't helped them to see that you've got those, they might not translate it.
I also feel like my CV is a bit bare.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's maybe fine. You know, if you do class rep, you know, that, I mean, that's great that you're doing that. You're already doing an activity that does allow you to develop a little further out with your course.
I also don't have massive amounts of relative work experience in real IT.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I consider real IT. There's no software development, etc. in there. There's work in the IT department, but that's all just sweet talking.
Well, either if you were to put together a work experience,
CV that was split into relevant experience and other, you would have to make the most of what you've got.
Right.
Or if you feel I don't have relevant experience at all, probably a skills-based CV would work better for you. But we might need to help you on that, because it does sound like you find it quite difficult to, almost like to avoid the blah blah. You know?
I hate the blah blah.
Yeah. But
it's
a lot of employers, it's not blah blah.
It's something
it's about,
that needs to die
it's about looking
death.
At it as a scientist. They want certain things. They have certain criteria that they're looking for. So they're looking for evidence of that criteria. So look at
the evidence given
as a scientist.
Forth is always
maybe
not
just
proper.
Feel very good for you.
Well,
it is, the more specific you can make it, the stronger it is as a piece of evidence. So it's not enough to say, well, I've done this module, therefore I've got good communication skills, or I've worked in this IT call centre, therefore I've got good communication. It's about being really specific, coming up with a very clear, specific example. And a line or two as a bullet point, you know, we're not talking a massive big paragraph and then I did this and then I did that. Doesn't matter what you need to know.
Languages, how useful are they really?
Again, it depends on what you're applying for.
That's because I found knowing other languages is pretty was not very important. At least not. It's never really wanted by any employer. They're
in
not.
In terms of like foreign languages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I
English. I'd assume basic competency
yeah.
in English
what
was
other
a requirement. I'm fluent in German. I'm
right.
mother tongue German,
mm-hmm.
and I know a decent amount of French.
Because I say where that you can just put languages, mention them. But again, you could perhaps turn that to your advantage when, if somebody is asking you about communication skills, the fact that you can communicate in three different languages gives you an advantage over somebody who can't. And that's as simple as it is. You know, if you were to do a skills-based CV, one of your examples, I maybe wouldn't put it the first.
Mm.
You know, I'm sure there's other things in terms of communicating as a class rep or communicating within your subject material. But a third interesting third example that you're fluent in three languages. Because actually,
I'm not fluent in three, I'm
well,
fluent in two. French, I can get by, but
yeah.
I
you
wouldn't
would
push
have
that.
To quantify, you would have to quantify it then.
How can you quantify the knowledge of a language except
basic.
Fluid speaker, everything else?
Conversational?
Depends on the
fluent,
conversation.
Native?
I couldn't have a conversation on an extremely technical engineering subject that I could in English in German.
That's not what conversational is. You know, it's about trying to give them an indication and quantify it to some degree. It's never going to be exact because you say it does depend on context. But, you know, you could put technical knowledge, conversational knowledge, basic, fluent, native. You know, there's certain things that could give an indication. But I think for you it's more that the whole idea of it is just quite alien to you and you don't like it. So perhaps actually seeing some examples or us looking at your experience and helping you to see how you could talk about it related to a particular job. I think it's important we help you to relate it to a job because then I think it'll help to see the benefits.
Right.
You might still decide, actually, no, I still quite prefer my one page CV, and that's absolutely fine as long as in that page it makes sense to the employer. That's all it is. That you're looking at it, imagine you are them, you've got a job advert, there's certain things we want you to have. In your one page, it's obvious you've got those. Fine, just have a one page, you'd be more comfortable
in
with that.
Britain, do you list your grades in your CV, like year one grades or semester
yeah,
grades?
Really
because other people I know do that,
yeah,
or they list their old high school grades,
yeah.
And I'm just like, if they ask for them, I'll provide
high
them.
High school back to 16,
hmm?
A summary of high school, so that the top level qualification you've got from your school, so that the international baccalaureate or
yeah.
A levels or higher here, but beyond that, no, early.
Well,
level
no,
level.
I mean. They put that in the CV and not just in an attached document.
Yeah, you put a minimal version of it in your CV.
There's no way to put a minimal version in it. It's something I have some. There's like 10 different courses.
Mm-hmm. What qualification did you do?
I'm one of these guys who did the advanced the American High School Diploma,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't really count for anything.
Mm-hmm.
What really matters is the AP tests.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically. A-levels.
I think we might have to just work with you to find out a way we could get these. I'm not convinced you'd do it in one page, to be honest. But
I'm used to just saying, if you want to see my grades,
mm-hmm.
see the attached document.
Yeah, you could put it in a transcript. It's possible to
it's
do.
It's a two-page
and
transcript.
And as you get older, you don't need these things anyway. They're only interested in your degree. But at the moment, because you're just in second year, they will want to know top level. you know, but if you can minimise that in some way, they don't want to see every single subject you've done with every single grade, and they don't want that at university either. The only time it becomes more important to give a bit more detail about grades is when you apply for masters, PhDs, and the academic achievements become more important. But it's about choosing, being selective. You won't have room for everything, so some things will have to get minimised or cut out. You know, you have to make decisions about what stays in. If you're doing a one-page CV, you have to make a lot more decisions about what gets cut out and what stays in. With two pages, there's a little bit more scope to change things to layout, order, emphasis. You've got a bit more scope in 2 pages to do that, to try and address their criteria. But bottom line is, it's imagine you're the employer. Does that say that job to me? If they're having to work a bit harder to relate you, they just might not. And that's really when it comes down. So anything you can do that helps them relate you to what it is you're applying for helps to get you to the top of the final.
Going abroad, positive, usually, I take it.
Yeah, again, it's maybe not enough just to say I went abroad. But it's, you know, if, say for example, they're looking for somebody who, I don't know, in a job advert, I'm using their language, who can engage with international stakeholders or who has
a global
perspective.
Not having to deal with locals.
You know, if they're looking for somebody who has more of a global perspective, if you've studied overseas, you can reflect on your experience using their language in a way that makes sense to them. So that you've understood this is what you want and I've done this, so I'm telling you in a way that makes sense.
Ironically, native speakers are the least suited to speaking, as in native English speakers, to speaking with clients in English.
Mm-hmm.
You're better off hiring someone who knows business English and not real English, for the simple point that the levels of communication are so different that actually being fluent in English when speaking with international clients is bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like really funny.
Well, there's advantages then. You're already seeing advantages in having different languages. You know, but you have to see the advantages and you have to be able to articulate that either in writing.
The problem is every time I write something like that, I always feel like I'm bullshitting.
That's not uncommon. Some people feel really uncomfortable with this. But do you know what the difference is? It's when people say, oh, I'm a great communicator, I'm good at this, I'm good at that, that's its mark. It's about providing it. It's about making it relevant. Are you talking about things that matter to them? And are you backing it up with evidence? Otherwise, it's just an empty claim. You know, sometimes I see at the top of a CV a little profile that says, I'm a fourth-year student, I've got great communication skills, and I went, blah, blah. It doesn't, the evidence isn't there. It's about backing it up. And whether you do that a little bit of that in the CV, maybe a little bit more in the cover letter if you want to elaborate on something, give a bit more detail of a particular project that you worked on that's relevant, that you think you might be interested in. You do that in cover letter, in paragraphs, through the writing. What I suggest you do, have you ever seen Carol? Have you ever come into the career centre?
Nope.
Have you been applying for jobs? Have you applied for anything?
Not that many.
What I suggest you do is identify one you like. Maybe look at Sage or some of the vacancies that come in through Informatic and identify a job that asks for certain things. And then as an exercise, come in and, you know, do a draft CV, have a go, bring in the one you've done. But we'll work with you to find out alternative ways to do it. You might still feel, no, now I know an alternative way to do it. I want to stick with my one page. But we can maybe work on ways to improve it for that job out there. You know, you're tailoring it each time. Because it is, well, particularly over a 2-page CV, there's a bit more flexibility over how you group things, the emphasis that you make. In a 1-page CV, you can still group them, but there's just less scope for manoeuvre.
Right. So I just look for a job a position I'd like to apply
for.
Yeah,
I mean, it helps if we're looking at your CV in the context of it being for something.
All right.
So that's what, if you bring in a CV, like, say for example, you came to see me in a short appointment with your CV and I said, what are you using it for, what you're applying for? If it's a specific job, great. If it's not sectoral, we do, but actually it's much better if you're, as an exercise, if you're pitching it for a particular type of job, and then we can work with you to say, well, for that job, this is how you should maybe talk about your experiences.
Okay.
If you could really think about your experiences, so for example, class rep, even though you feel uncomfortable with it, almost like a mind map or something, what do you think you're getting out of that experience? What is it allowing you to do? What do you think you're gaining, developing, learning? And other things, and then that's a big sort of map of you, and then you can start selecting things from that when it comes to making job applications. So you're not popping it all in there and page blah blah blah. It's selecting depending on what you're looking for a job. So in some cases you might be talking about your language, maybe making more of an emphasis. If you're applying for a company that has divisions in Germany, for example, you would probably make sure they know about that. If it wasn't relevant, you'd maybe be minimising that. So what you talk about and how you talk about it changes.
I'll,
so if you want to
I'll
come and see us, yeah, just
how
phone. You can either phone us any day from 9:30 if you want one of the shorter 20-minute appointments on the day, or if you want the 45-minute longer appointment. Might be better to start off with that actually, with the longer one. But don't really have to.
Phone up or send an email or.
Just give us a phone. That's the 650-4670. We'll have a look at the website. The number's on there. If you just give us a call, we're happy to either do the short or the long appointment, whichever you prefer.
Hello. I was wondering, I'd like to give an appointment, like probably this week. I'm not sure how long it should be.
Okay.
So basically, I have basically no work experience, and I'd really like to do something this summer, like an internship, anything. But I would like to be like something sort of relevant, anything in IT. But I don't have something. I'm not specific about what, but just do something. That's, well, not like working in a supermarket.
You're not sort of retail or hospitality,
yeah.
Something different, okay.
And I do have very good grades, have an A2 average both last year and this year, but I would like to obviously have some more experience as well, and I'm also going abroad next year. So
oh, right, great. Where are you off to?
Berkeley.
Oh, Berkeley,
yeah.
Good for you. Is that for the year out or is it for a block?
For a year. So, I mean...